question.
Well, that was a great job, a great panel. It's always great when there's a little back and forth among the panelists, but I hope you'll stay. Right now, we're going to have a quick keynote speech by somebody who I think will be very interesting to this audience, and it's my pleasure to introduce him. The panel is going to remain seated for this. But our next speaker is Ambassador David Gross, who I think is probably well known to this audience. He's the at the State Department, the coordinator for information and communications policy. So in that capacity, he's really our spokesman to the rest of the world on a lot of the issues that we care about. Before that, he was a lawyer, also spent some time at AirTouch. So he's a guy who understands this industry from the inside and out, and I think we'll have some very interesting things to say to us. So, Ambassador.
Thank you very much. I'm going to be very brief because our next set of breakout sessions starts at 11:30. And it seems to me my job here is to complicate everybody's life, and complicate it because, as you've heard from the panels this morning, and particularly the panel we just had on filtering, these are extraordinary complex issues technically, from a policymaking position, and are constantly evolving. Now, if you think that they are complex domestically, and they certainly are, think of it in the three or four or five dimensions we have to deal with internationally. And to underscore that, recognize that everyone around the world that looks at policymaking in the developed and in the developing world monitors carefully, studies closely the conversations we're having today. The United States, from a policymaking position, particularly as we discuss these things domestically, is viewed without doubt as being the leader in this area. Now, that's not to confuse the issue by saying that everyone is interested in following the U.S. lead, but everyone is acutely interested in understanding the debate, the technical aspects, the policymaking aspects of this debate, in order to both understand how it might and might not apply to their situations domestically around the world. That debate is particularly acute in multilateral organizations, whether it's at the International Telecommunications Union, at the OECD, at APEC, as well as in our bilateral discussions, because virtually everything that we're talking about here domestically resonates and is amplified internationally. To also complicate the situation, of course, we deal with our domestic situation, of course, in a certain almost static way, recognizing, of course, its underlying dynamism. It is important, it seems to me, as we discuss these issues, to recognize where we are today and where we were just a short time ago, and then think about that in the international context. For example, in the year 2000, globally, there were approximately 400 million internet subscribers, a remarkably high number, but still 400 million just in the year 2000. Today, there are over 1.3 billion internet subscribers, and that growth is largely in the developing world. As the world has moved from connections that are wireline-based to being more wireless, the number of wireless connections globally is even more staggering in its growth. In the year 2000, there were about 700 million wireless subscribers, a remarkably high number in the year 2000. Today, there are over 3 billion wireless subscribers, and many people around the world, particularly in the developing world, are using their wireless devices to access the internet. What does this mean for us? Well, it means, among other things, that the discussion that we're having this morning, which assumes, in many respects, the fact that the type of connectivity that we see within the United States, recognizing that different areas have different aspects and different ages deal with the technology in different ways, has been transformed. Back in the 90s, where we had these discussions, and I think the first time in a really serious, deep way, there was this issue about how we were going to transform ourselves. And I think without doubt, that transformation has happened before our very eyes, and really, it with extraordinary speed. And so now we talk about the way in which different generations use the technology, but we use as our operating assumption that virtually everybody has access. I know that that's not technically true, but as an operating principle, We assume that that's the case. And as we heard this morning, the youngest parts of our country not only take this for granted, but don't understand that there's really any issue about it. That, of course, they have access to it. It's just a question of how robust that access is. Now, you take that situation in which we deal with from a policymaking position here in the United States, and you transform that internationally. And although there are other countries that are similar to us in terms of the depth of usage in the developed world, recognize, of course, that despite those remarkable statistics I just gave to you, that for much of the world, there are still early days when it comes to access to the internet and the issues that come from it. And so they look to us both for guidance and for understanding and for some technical help as they try to understand how they should deal with these issues. And to complicate things further, although the growth in this area is far and away in the developing world, the way in which governments in the developing world look at this is, of course, one of great complexity. There are some that look at these issues very much the way we do, of which they recognize the importance of free flow of information and not restricting how that information flows across the network, recognizing some of the complicated legal issues that were discussed this morning. On the other extreme, there are those who seek to use some of the technologies that have been discussed with great sophistication in the previous panel to suppress speech and to suppress political speech. And how we deal with those issues is, of course, very difficult. And they look at this discussion and try to understand where we draw our lines. And then they, of course, seek to draw other lines. And our job is to try to explain that which we think is appropriate and that which we think is not appropriate, both in light of international agreements, but also in terms of the greater good and the good that comes from societies that allow for innovation and change. We also seek, however, to understand that is in fact this conversation is an important conversation really only for those that are connected. And although the numbers I gave you are startling and remarkable in terms of the growth of the world as a whole in terms of their ability to be connected, there is still much to be done. And we've been very active internationally to try to promote getting everyone globally connected, because the issues of internet freedom only affect those that have access to the internet. And so one of our great jobs, together with industry and with colleagues around the world, is to seek to connect those who are not yet connected. That is a great calling. It is, in fact, a remarkable and transformational aspect of the world we see today, but there's still much to be done. To give one example, in Africa, along the east coast of Africa, that area still does not yet have high-speed, low-cost terrestrial internet connections. Thanks to some programs that were put together by U.S. industry together with the U.S. government, in conferences held this past year, there are now two major submarine cables that are being constructed that will connect East Africa to the rest of the world. Similarly, later this year in May, we will gather together ministers from across the western part of Africa to come and discuss the issues of trying to connect more of Africa at lower costs with greater connectivity, particularly in the rural parts of Africa, to the internet and to wireless communications generally. And we will bring industry and governments together to discuss new technologies, new opportunities for that to happen. We do that because of the economic benefit that comes to the world from having greater connectivity. We do it because of the social impact that comes from this, the ability to provide better medical services, educational services, and the like. And we do it, of course, because of the political impact, which is why the free flow of information is so critically important, and why during these discussions about appropriate restrictions and inappropriate restrictions that we delve into and discuss with great passion and great interest and of great importance, we also need to step back and remember that as the world watches us and tries to understand what these discussions are all about, they will seek to use and often to misuse the discussions. And we need to make sure that as we empower individuals to make the appropriate choices. We don't, at the same time, empower governments to restrict their ability or restrict their people from having ability to be able to have access, where appropriate, to content of their own choosing, in their own way, and in ways that will allow them and their children to be able to have access to the world's knowledge in the same way we enjoy it here today. Thank you very much.